the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Again, that's right. Time for another hour Bucket Strategy Investing program. Brain Trust standing by once again to help you out with your money issues. We're here to answer all of your money questions. You just have to give us a call. Let us know what they are. Professor Rick Plum joins me. I'm Johnny Dean. We're here in studio. Plum is our main Brain Trust advisor as always. We have more money strategies headed your way. Of course, you can take part in all of this. In fact, it's mandatory. All right, you give us a call right now at our phone number in studio, 877-PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Currently, we have all the lines open for you. A couple of people hung up there during the news, so now is a great opportunity to get in touch with us. You can also find us online. That's at wealthed.com, our website. If you have any questions or comments that you'd like to get to us here on the show via email, that's where you go. You look for the link where it says Find Your Answer. You can easily take it from there. Just submit us your questions. Wealth Ed, that's your resource for many of the topics that we discuss on this program, including Roth IRAs in just a little while here. Again, our number in studio, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. We do try to talk strategy on this show. It's strategy investing, of course. Now, if you don't have a strategy, a retirement-type strategy, I would strongly urge you to get one. You should not put your retirement funds at risk by not being prepared for whatever comes down the line. You can call Professor Plum or anyone at Lucia Capital Group at their off-air number, 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. You can have them look at what you've got. You can have them design a bucket strategy that is specifically tailored to meet your individual needs. Are your retirement goals being met? If you're not sure about it, or if you're saying they're not being met, you can give us a call right here. The Brain Trust will tell you if you're on the right track. Again, off the air, 800-644-1150. Our number on the air, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. As I said, we have all the lines open right now. So if you have a money question, get on board. We will talk to you about whatever situation is on your mind. Okay, so it's tax time, tax season. And it will be for the next, I don't know, little while here, even you know, even after the due date, I think people are still talking about their taxes.
We complaining about them.
Yes. Now, have you ever gotten that phone call? I get phone calls. I don't know why. I don't get really many emails on this, but phone calls. Usually, they call in the middle of the day, so I don't answer my phone. It just picks up, and it's somebody with kind of a sounding in a far off land telling me that they're the IRS and that they. Yes, and I can sometimes barely understand them. Or they're using these robo-type calls. But more often than not, they're reading just from a script, and they're telling me that they're, to have my attorney contact them because of they've been trying to get in touch with me, and I haven't responded, and the police are on
IRS,
the way.
IRS, yeah, there's a warrant for your, I've heard of it, I've never had the call. There's a warrant for your arrest, you need to do this right away so that they can quell the warrant, and you know, all this kind of good stuff. They try to scare the living heck out of you.
Well, they do. And I've read about these where people have either done this just to follow along and find out what happens, or they have been actual victims. But they get somebody on the line, and they have gone so far as to say, if you hang up, we're going to call the cops, and they're going to come arrest you. Stay on the phone with me while you go to the bank and wire us your money. Now, I don't
Please.
Know why anybody would think that they have to do this.
For one thing, if they're saying they're from the IRS and they're calling you, they're lying. The IRS does not call you at home or on your cell phone. The IRS will send you a letter, and they will ask you to respond the same way. And so in many cases, you're going to then, if you do get a letter from the IRS and you have either prepared your own return or you have somebody else prepare it, you in most cases want somebody else talking to the IRS on your behalf, like an enrolled agent or a CPA. You want to talk to the IRS through them, not on your own. But it's all through the letter, and they set it up all that way. They don't call you.
No.
So if somebody's calling you from the IRS saying that the police are on the way, first off, we don't have debtor's prison anymore, unless you're so far in debt to the IRS for years and years and years. This is not a new thing that you're hearing about for the first time. Then you may have an issue, but you're going to know time that they're coming to confiscate.
No, they're going to. You'll have already been in court at that point.
Yeah.
You've already been in tax court.
You will already have thumbed your nose at them many times in tax court by that the time
exactly.
that happens. Phone calls from the IRS do not happen. Same thing with emails. The IRS does not email you for the purpose of telling you that you're deficient or something of that nature. Now, they do email you to say that, you know, like if you're e-filing your return, they'll give you a return email if you include the email address
that
said it was received. If you want to know if it's accepted or not, go and, you know, look at it some other way. But they're not going to email you saying, we need more information. They are not asking for information through phones or through the email. Do not respond to an IRS inquiry from phone call or emails.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this is one of the most rapidly rising frauds out there.
It's true. There was a new report, Professor Plum, from the data security firm IDT 911.
Well, 911.
Or 911, whatever. Same thing.
Information.
Found that tax-related fraud cases soared 154% between 2014 and 2015, and they say it doesn't seem to be tapering off. Losses from tax refund fraud will be hit an estimated $21 billion by the end of 2016. Now, the IRS is already an alert on this particular thing.
Right.
The email tax scams that you mentioned, the phishing, the malware incidents, that skyrocketed this year by around 400%. What they're looking for is information related to filing status. They want to know, have you filed it yet? They want to get your personal identification numbers. They want to get refund, personal information, all this stuff. Because what they've been doing, and actually some of this was on the IRS website, that or the IRS itself, not the website, but within the IRS itself, some of the taxpayer data had been taken. And what they were doing, Professor Plum, is before you could file your return, they were going in, using your information and filing a phony return on your behalf and getting a refund that you never, either you legitimately should have gotten or you never were entitled to.
Right, but just because you file your return early doesn't mean that they can't file a follow-up return, maybe an amended return or something of that nature, to try to steal more, and then you put you on the hook. So it's not that, you know, I got to file early to avoid fraud. There are ways for these, you know, if they would just use their knowledge for good. I mean, they're pretty creative in the way that they steal from you. But make sure that you don't give out your personal information. That's a key issue. And that's exactly what they're looking for. In this particular area, when they're calling you or they're emailing you, they're looking for information, ways that they can get into your system and file in either a fraudulent return or hijack your own return. That's what they're trying. And it's happening a lot.
So yes.
Be protective of your information.
They're telling you to minimize the risk of whatever exposure you have. You should monitor your accounts on a daily basis. I don't know if I do that, but there are people who say that you should do that. And manage the damage if you are a victim of identity theft. And it's not just them, by the way.
No, it's not just outside fraudsters.
Well, I mean, in some ways it is. But you should also make sure that your tax preparer, whoever you pick, is somebody who is looking out for not just your best interest, but at the same time, following the letter of the law. There is such thing as tax preparer fraud.
Yes.
And the problem, of course, is this. People think, well, I had somebody else do my taxes. I'm not responsible.
Wrong.
They're the ones who signed it. That is absolutely incorrect.
Well, whether they signed it or didn't sign it, you signed it, and you're saying that I'm certifying that what they did was correct, and I'm standing behind it. It is your problem. Now, if you have a problem, you can try to go after the person that did the return, but in many cases, it's very hard to get them to do that. But the real issue is you don't know who to trust, right? You don't know who to go to. Well, here's a couple of tips on who not to go to. Do not go to a tax preparer to tease you a refund without even seeing your situation. They can't do that. They don't know anything about you. Don't go to somebody who guarantees or promises a fund than anybody else can give you.
Yeah, I've heard them where they say, well, what have you gone to others? Well, how much did they say they're going to get you, a refund they're going to get you? Oh, you mean you're going to owe money? Nobody's ever owed money when I filled out their form. They don't know what to look for. I will get you the biggest
only
refund.
Only I know these inside tricks.
Exactly. Have you seen them too where the preparer says,
how much do I have to pay for this return, John?
What's it going
to
cost?
What's it going to cost me to get my taxes prepared? Don't worry. I only take a percentage of your refund.
Right.
So it's in my best interest to get you a much bigger refund because And the bigger I get to make on the same side. No, don't do that.
No, the fee.
That's against the law.
It is. The fee should be based on how difficult your tax return is, not the amount of the refund that you're going to be getting.
Most of the tax preparers I've seen charge you per form. If they have to enter, 10 1099s, they'll charge you for each 1099. They'll charge you for each W-2. They'll charge you for each successive schedule that they have. But it doesn't matter whether there's $1 million on that schedule or $10 on that schedule. Yet generally, obviously, the more complex, the more it's going to cost. But they charge you a flat. It's almost like a flat fee based on how many pages it is.
And have you seen it where a preparer of some kind says, "I'm going to have them mail your refund to me, and then I will send it to you."
I've never seen
bad
it.
Idea.
I've heard of it.
Yeah,
always have the refund either directly deposited to your bank account or have them send the check to you personally, not to the preparer.
Yes, make sure that the tax preparer that you use knows about tax law, because that's why you hire them. In fact, it's one of the reasons why they said many of the states require them to be licensed or registered. They have to be an attorney, a CPA, CTEC, registered
tax. That's California.
Well, that's true. Yeah, the C part. Anyway, 877 Planner. We'll get to some more of your emails. Look out for this stuff. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. We're coming right back. Talking to you about some of your retirement income challenges, some of the strategies you should employ here on Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group, talking to you about your money situations, answering your questions here as we do every day. Phone lines are open, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. If you have any questions on anything that we talk about, now is a great time to call that number, 877-PLANNER. You can also go to our website, wealtheded.com, W-E-A-L-T-H, wealtheded.com, as in wealth education, and get some of the background on some of the things that we talk about on this show, audio, video, blog posts, all that stuff. It's right there at wealtheded.com. It's where you also go to sign up for the workshops. Another one is happening this Saturday. We're in full workshop swing, Professor Plum.
Yeah, you say we?
We as in the royal we. I don't know how else you want to put it. But Seattle, Washington, you're going to be headed up there Friday, so you can go meet with the folks in Seattle on Saturday and talk to them at the workshop Saturday morning, February 27th. I will suggest that you go meet the Brain Trust, talk to Professor Plum. Terry Keyes will be there. Advisors talking to you about whatever is on your mind. Certainly, Professor, retirement income strategies are going to be on people's mind. And that's the first thing you're going to
do. Well, that's the main focus of the discussion. Mm-hmm. But we do take a picture of you along with us, so that people who listen to us on the radio can actually see a picture of you and realize why it's radio.
Why we do it too.
Yes.
And why you're ashamed of me being there. Well, somebody has to hold down the fort here, all right? That's what I said. Even if it's on a Saturday, I will do my job. Anyway, join the Professor and Terry Keyes in Seattle this Saturday. After that, there will be more. Phoenix, Arizona is in a couple of weeks, Saturday, March 12th. And Saturday, March 19th, Portland, Oregon. Seattle, Phoenix, Portland, look out. The Brain Trust is headed your way, both Terry Keyes and Professor Rick Plum. You should join them wherever they happen to be. There will be more after that. If you go to wealtheded.com, you can look at the live, I think it's the live events tab. Click on that, and then you'll find out where they are. And you can sign up. It's all free. All free. Learn all about the stuff that we talk about. And get your money questions answered. I know last time in Las Vegas, you had a lot of people asking a whole bunch of different questions.
Very wide variety.
Yeah, there are, and we anticipate in different locations which questions might be asked. Some are more popular in different places. As we've said many times, Phoenix, Arizona, for whatever reason, happens to be the annuity capital. And annuity strategies. I had a question that I've been holding off on this. And I'm just going to throw it out at you with regards to annuities. Buying an annuity inside of an IRA, is this a good thing or a bad thing, Professor Plum?
It's neither. It's just what it is. I don't have a problem buying an annuity inside of an IRA because I'm not buying it for tax-deferred investment in the first place. I'm buying it for whatever the annuity is giving me, whether it's an interest rate, whether it's a potential interest rate, whether it's a lifetime income, this, that, or the other thing. I'm not buying a variable annuity for long-term tax deferral. In fact, I don't like annuities for long-time tax deferral. Now, back 30 years ago, okay, they made a little bit of sense for long-time tax deferral because capital gain rates and ordinary income rates were the same. The high rates were the same rates. We had pretty close to a flat tax back in the late 80s, early 90s, until they started messing with it again. But now we've got this capital gain tax treatment that's better, or qualified dividend tax treatment that's better. We've got the ability for using ETFs, index funds, very tax-sensitive investing. So I can do fairly tax-sensitive investing for long-term growth, paying very little in the way of taxes as I go, probably less in the way of taxes as I go than the fees inside the annuity. So I'm not a big fan of owning a long-term tax-deferred growth annuity in my personal account. Hey, if I'm going to have a tax-deferred investment that's going to create, well, let me put it this way, if I'm going to have an asset that creates ordinary income, I'd rather have it in an account that's going to be distributed as ordinary income no matter where the income came from. So I actually prefer seeing them inside the IRA than in my personal account, although that's not a cold, hard, fast rule. There are obviously reasons for doing things differently in different situations. But sure, I will buy, I will recommend, I will talk about putting annuities inside of IRAs all day long. Yeah. I don't care about the tax deferral.
Well, and the reason the question comes up is because people have been questioned the common argument is, why you're paying for tax deferral? No, you're getting tax deferral anyway inside of an IRA.
Why pay for tax deferred investment in a tax deferred account? And I say, I'm not paying for a tax deferred investment. I'm paying for something else. I'm paying for the lifetime income. Or I have a fixed annuity where I'm not paying anything anyway. I just am trying to get a better interest rate. I have an index annuity where there are no fees. So it's not the tax deferral that I'm looking at. It's what return characteristic, what is the investment characteristic that I'm trying to accomplish. And like I said, if I have an asset that's going to create ordinary income, I'd much rather have that ordinary income coming from my IRA instead of having it come from my personal account and have to take ordinary income out of my IRA and double them up on top of each other.
So does it matter so much what type of an annuity it is? I mean, if you have you have the immediate annuity, a deferred annuity, variable, maybe lifetime income, whether or not you purchase this inside of your IRA, what's the main consideration here?
Taxes. Depending on what you're doing. You talked about an immediate annuity.
Yeah.
If I'm going out today and buying, for whatever reason, I've decided that an immediate annuity is appropriate for me right now, I'm 75 years old and all I care about is the income and I want an immediate annuity and I have a chance of buying it in my IRA or my personal account, I might buy it in my personal account because that cash flow is going to be very tax efficient. Maybe I get, making up a number, maybe I get $10,000 of income or cash flow that the insurance company is sending me, but maybe only $1,500 of it is taxable. So from a cash flow standpoint, I have a high cash flow, but very little taxable event. Whereas if I put IRA, it's all IRA. Now, if I've got a fairly large IRA and fairly small personal account, I'll do that inside my IRA because that now satisfies a lot of my required minimum distribution. I mean, it's by its very nature, mm-hmm. It's satisfying the required minimum distribution. So a lot of it has to do with what's going on in my overall life. Now, on the other side, if I am using a 1035 exchange, or if I already have an annuity that I'm going to change into an immediate annuity and annuitize it, where the majority of the annuity that I have is ready appreciation from years and years and years of tax deferral, well, I'd rather see, I can't just put it into my IRA, but I'd rather have seen that in my IRA because then it's going to come out as ordinary income anyway, whether it comes out of my personal account or otherwise. So it's all a matter of, A, what do you got going on in your life? B, where is your money? Lots of personal money, very little IRA. Lots of IRA, very little personal money. And how to structure it to be as tax efficient as possible.
So
the problem I see, just like portfolios, are people buy these thinking that they're being very tax sensitive and all they're doing is more deferred growth. I've seen people with a raise take the $200,000 they have in their personal account and put it into an annuity, and now 100% of their money is in tax deferred areas. Sure, while they don't need any income, it's very tax efficient, but at some point, if they need to get some income, all taxable then for a while until you withdraw all the earnings from the annuity. And if you happen to pass away, It's all taxable income with the exception of the principal and the non-qualified to your heirs.
Yes.
That's not the best deal.
And by the way, ordinary income rates, correct?
Yep. No step up in basis on those accounts.
No, it isn't, which is why we suggest that if you have, oftentimes, not every time, but oftentimes, capital assets probably belong inside your personal account.
Yep.
Just because of the tax favored, because of the tax treatment. Yeah. All right. 877-PLANNER. Give us a call. Lines are open. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. More for Plum, which of course means more for the rest of us, right? 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. It's probably blasted from your 8-track.
Yeah, my 8-track in my car.
In your car.
My Yugo.
Years and years ago.
I can thankfully say I never actually owned an 8-track.
I did. You didn't own an 8-track?
No,
I had one at home and one in the car.
No. I had cassettes. I mean, I got into it right when the cassettes were becoming popular.
Yeah, but the cassettes, there was a period of time where really only 8-tracks were the, way to go.
Didn't have access to the music or the car at that time, so we did not have 8-tracks.
That's too bad, because you never know the joy of listening to a song and saying, I want to hear it again, so you have to fast forward and punch a couple of tracks and hope you stop it at the right time.
Or listening to a song and have it cut off in the middle of the song,
as it goes to the next track.
And then up again on the other end, on this side.
Oh, sure. It happened all the time. You would just hear a little click. It'd be a very brief pause, and the song would continue. And you would know right in the song where it happened, too.
We thought that was part of the song.
Well, I suppose it was. In fact, one of the best things about cassettes when they came out, two of them were you could actually rewind. And they remember, you could listen to the other side without having to take the cassette out and flip it over.
Auto reverse. Yes.
I remember.
Man, we were high cotton then, man.
I'll tell you, man. Anyway, all right. 877 PLANNER, PLANNER. Oh, it's been years.
Kids today just don't know what's going on.
I know it. How good they have it. Spoken like a true old person right here. Okay, if you want to email us, it's wealthed.com, W-E-A-L-T-H, wealthed.com. Phone lines are open, 877-PLANNER. You have money questions. We have money answers. Let's get together and talk about them. 877-PLANNER. David in St. Peter's, Missouri. My father uses the bucket strategy and listens to your show every day. Well, that's good, Peter. David. I spoke with him last week about the amount of taxes that I paid in 2015, and he suggested that I write in to ask Professor Plum if there are any possible tax havens to save on how much I'm paying to the federal government. He goes on to say, I'm 34 years old, married, have a 22-month-old daughter. I have a Roth 401k through my company that has about $40,000 in it. My wife and I both have Roth IRAs that total about $5,000. My wife is a stay-at-home mom, so I'm the single source of income. In 2015, I grossed $226,007. Wow.
Not bad for a 34-year-old.
Not bad for anybody, and paid $46,733 in federal taxes. My father suggested that this is high and thought that you might be able to help me invest some of this income in a way that would reduce my taxes. My company does not offer a health savings account, which I had heard may be an option. Can you please make a recommendation as what I should do to reduce my federal taxes? Thanks in advance for your help. That's David in St. Peter's, Missouri.
Well, David, you're using the Roth 401k, so if all you're going to look at is, and I would actually suggest this, is use the traditional 401k. Put in the $18,000 in the traditional 401k. $46,000 on the 226 does sound a skosh high, but there's not all that many things you can do. Or kids, get more deductions that way. Of course, that'll be more expensive than the tax savings. Have a bigger mortgage, move to a place with a higher property. But those are just expenses that reduce your taxes, but you still have the expense. So other than putting things away on a tax-favored basis, meaning that you're using the tax-deductible 401k. And I'd switch my $18,000 over to the tax-deductible 401k, and it'd probably save you $5,000-$7,000 in taxes. I mean, it might be a nice way to go. Probably not seven, but it'll probably save you some taxes there. I'm not sure how you're doing the Roth IRA with $226,000 unless you're doing the backdoor Roth IRA. Because with $226,000 of gross wages and doing a Roth IRA, I don't know what's coming off the top, because we have to look at your AGI is probably fairly close to 220, and that's above the 193 limit for doing a Roth IRA. So hopefully you're using the back as a strategy to be able to create that tax-free buildup.
He may have had a Roth from back when he could contribute, you know, when the income was lower,
right,
is my guess.
So the fact that you have a 401k means that you aren't going to be able to deduct the contribution, and it's unlikely that your wife will be able to create a spousal IRA that would be a deductible contribution. So, you know, if we do the traditional 401k, your 226 drops down to, you know, 218 or 208 or something, still too high for a tax-deductible IRA, even a spousal IRA. So now we're just going to do non-deductible traditional IRAs and do the backdoor Roth, continue to save $18,000 into the 401k and $11,000 between you and your spouse into the Roth IRAs, the two-step. But as far as tax savings, there's really not a lot you can do. There are some investments out there. They haven't worked out well lately, that where you save a lot of money up front, but unfortunately they're not the greatest investments. So it's only good to save the tax money if you actually get your money back through the investment. And so unfortunately they haven't worked out that well in the last couple of years, mostly because they were oil related.
Yeah, the commodity price. There were those oil and gas
pipelines and other things.
Sure, which as you said, they can work out great in the front end. You can
save
reduce
some taxes.
Yes, but the question is, can you get some of that money back through the investment?
Yes, and so they haven't worked lately. They've worked in the past, but there's really not a lot you can do. You're an employee. You don't have the control to be able to do anything else. Plus, you're 34. There's not much else you can do, other than creating deductions, which are expenses. That's about all you're going to be able to do, unfortunately.
Yeah.
That's where you're at. Now, if you don't own a house, I'd say look into buying a house, because $46,000 does seem to be a little high. I haven't done the math on it, but it does seem a little high on me, unless you don't have any other deductions.
Well, unless he's counting FICA and Medicare and all that, I don't know if there's some people count that as part of their quote-unquote federal taxes, because that's the amount of money that they don't get to keep, and it goes to a federal program. I don't know that that's the case.
When it's stated this way, I'm guessing he probably is looking right at the tax return saying, this is what I owe, and that would not include FICA.
Okay, well, that may be true.
And there's really nothing you can do about the FICA. You're an employee. You make more than the wage base. You're doing the best thing you can on the FICA. You're maxing it out, and you're only paying it on a portion of your wages to begin with. So that's a good thing. $46,000 just seems a little high, but not outrageous, unfortunately,
okay,
in that situation.
All right. Well, David, if you want to give us some more information, you can, and maybe we can help you out a little bit more. I mean, the thing about it is, $226,000, that's not a bad income at all. So
Very nice.
if you're paying 40 grand or 46 or whatever it is, I mean, you might be able to reduce it somewhat. But
it just seems high to me. It does seem high. Your dad's right. It just does seem high, and I don't know why.
Okay. Well, maybe you can give us some more information. Let's go to Ann in Florence, Wisconsin. By the way, 877-PLANNER, our number, 877-752-6637. If you have money questions, you give us a call. We got lines open right now. Ann in Florence, Wisconsin. I'm 59. I am on disability as of June of 2015. I work full-time and have all my credits. My disability pays more than my retirement age of 62 and 66. I was married 10 years, and his income was 50 grand a year. He was born in 1944. I'm single. Am I able to collect on his Social Security if it's larger than my disability? So they have the 10 years in.
So you have what's known as a qualifying marriage. It's like you've been divorced for more than a couple of years. So you have the ability, if his benefit, if the spousal, I'm assuming the gentleman is still alive.
She doesn't say, but yeah.
If the spousal retirement benefit is larger than what you're receiving, then you could get an increase in your benefit. But they're not going to look at what you're receiving today. They're going to look at it from a retirement standpoint, not necessarily a disability standpoint. But if he's, at some point in the future, if he passes away and his benefits, you have the ability to step up at that point. So if it's larger, sure, it can work. But depending on what you've been taking, disability benefit. Now, you say you've got your 40 credits in. If your disability benefit is very, very small, then you potentially could get a bigger benefit from the fact that you were married at some point. Now you're 62, 59. Well, you're 59, you're only 59 right now, so you're not actually eligible for a retirement benefit from your ex-spouse. So you would have to wait until 62 to be able to apply for anything if it's larger. And it would be a reduced spousal benefit at 62. So it may be better for you to wait until 66 to be able to apply for that benefit.
Now, the disability benefit is it's based on your full retirement age benefit, is
kind
it
of, yeah. It's under the same formula, with or basic same formula. Yeah, so it's like receiving your retirement formula early without a reduction.
So when Ann says my disability is paying more than my retirement benefit of age 66, I'm sort of wondering how that works there.
It's definitely more than the 62 because
the 62
is reduced.
But 66.
It's going to be similar to the 66. It's going to be within a couple of bucks.
Okay, so it's going to be basically the same.
Yeah, it's going to be basically the same as the 66. But you're getting it now at 59, and so you take it for a longer period of time without the reduction. At some point in the future, when you're old enough, you're not old enough yet, you may be eligible for either a spousal retirement or a survivor benefit. And if that's the case, then you would step up to that benefit a later date. If, unfortunately, he passes away between now and when you turn 66, I'd probably wait until 66 to take the widow's benefit, because then it's as large as, and your full retirement age is probably 66 in 2 months. So wait until your full retirement age to take the widow's benefit if he passes away between now and then.
Yeah, and keep in mind, too, that because it's your accident, it's a qualifying marriage, if it works out, you can apply on his benefit, and he doesn't have to have applied, although by now I would assume he has, because he's he's over 70 years old. But he doesn't have to know about it, and nothing has to be done on his part. Okay, we just got some room on the phones, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. Got some more of your emails to get to and your phone calls. Trivia is just ahead as well. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, Bucket Strategy Investing. We're coming right back. More Plum requests. Our request to you.
This is one of yours too.
Oh no, this is Rod. Yeah, I mean it is, but you know, I like to count this among some of the songs that sometimes some of the stuff we play, you just shake your head and say why, you know? You shouldn't have to ask why. Just want to say that. You accept. But we do have a lot of good music on this program. If you have any requests, just we can play it for you. It's all request radio right here and television on Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Don't forget, I'll just remind you again, this Saturday, another workshop happening in Seattle. There's still room. They'll make room for as many people as want to show up. This Saturday, February 27th in Seattle at the Hilton SeaTac. You locals know right where that is. They're near the airport. Join the Brain Trust this Saturday. Learn all of retirement income strategies from Professor Plum and Terry Keyes and the local advisors in Seattle. Phoenix happens a couple of weeks after that, Saturday, March 12th, and then Portland, Oregon on Saturday, March 19th. So you got Seattle, Phoenix, and Portland. More to follow. WealthEd.com. Go to sign up. It's all free. WealthEd.com. And just tell us you'd like to be there, and we would love to see you there. Learn all about retirement income challenges and strategies. And, by the way, get your money questions answered. Bring your questions, whatever it is. There will be time toward the end of the presentation. They will make time for whoever has questions. Ask them, and you will get your questions answered while you're there. WealthEd.com. All right, before we get to the next email and phone calls, 877-PLANNER, by the way, is our number, PLANNER. I don't know what to make of this. This piece of trivia might sound weird on the surface, but maybe it's not. I don't know. According to Congressional Research Service, 20, count them, 20 current members of the U.S. House of Representatives, that's 435 people, by the way, in the House, 20 of them have no educational degree beyond a high school diploma. Okay, so, I mean, fine. A lot of business people.
Maybe
never went to college, and so it's not that it's, you know, any bad thing.
I'd like to know how many of them, like one of our presidential candidates, has never had a job in the public sector or in the private sector.
You mean where they're all just
the only jobs they've ever had is a councilman, mayor, moved up the ranks that way.
I don't honestly know. I mean, there's one supposed businessman who's running for president right now.
Well, I'm not saying that a businessman is the only thing that's running for president. It'd be nice to have a combination of the two, a little bit of experience in both areas.
Yeah, and not to say that working in Congress or, a lot of times they go from governorships to the presidency or from Congress, local politics to Congress to the presidency, or at least attempt to do that. So the question is, have they ever had a real job?
Have they ever had to make payroll? Have they ever had to deal with people that they could fire?
Well, no, and I think a lot of times that clouds their judgment. You know, you have these people who are career politicians whose only, you know, they've always had a paycheck. They've never had to worry about it.
And they've never had a profit and loss statement.
No, they've never had to because, I mean, as long as they got paid, which they always did, you know, they might say, well, there's not enough local tax revenue coming in. Or at the state level, there's not enough state tax coming in. So we're going to cut everywhere else. But I still get, you know.
Yes.
It's not like they're not going to say, well, we're going to shut the city down. We're firing everybody. We're shutting the city down.
Well, they can't do that.
No, they can't. But I do think somebody with business experience, I would never endorse anybody, and I'm not doing this at all, believe me. It takes a lot more than business experience. But it would be nice to have somebody who's had at least a little bit.
Because there are some things in running a government that is not the same as running a business.
No, in fact.
Where at times you need to overspend just because you can't be so profit loss oriented that there's times where the government steps in and spends even though they don't have the money.
Well, they always
have
the
money. But then they're also supposed to pull back when they do have the money.
Well, the thing is they always have the money. There is never a time when they so the real question is, you know, do you worry about inflation, things like that? I just, you know, I think it would be nice to have somebody who's not some mega billionaire who's...
Those are the only people running.
That's the problem.
Because that's what it takes to run.
Well, I don't think Bernie's not a... Is Bernie a billionaire? I don't think
he's not necessarily... No. And I don't know if Hillary's a billionaire.
She's
if any
a multi-multi-millionaire.
Yeah,
she's a multi-multi-millionaire. So I don't know if she's actually hit hasn't hit that yet. No, she's not. The Clintons are not there yet, okay? They have a mere couple of hundred million.
Can't say that she hit the B yet.
No, I'm not going to say that. Not going to use the B word. Okay, anyway, that's enough of that. Okay, let's get at least one more email in here. We only got a couple of minutes left. Our phone lines are open if you want to try to get in here toward the end of the show. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Pamela in San Jose, California. My husband turned 70 last November and applied for Social Security benefits at that time. I turned 62 in December. Rather than applying for my age 62 benefit, can I apply for a spousal benefit? Thank you.
No. Because you are under full retirement age, even though you did turn 62 before the end of last year, at this time, you cannot choose to apply for only a spousal retirement benefit without applying for your own benefit first. However, since you did have the foresight to be born in 1953, before 1954, meaning you were 62 years old before the end of last year, when you get to full retirement age, then you have the option. You're under the old rules. The new rules don't affect you on this. So, but even under the old rules, you had to wait until you became full retirement age to choose one or the other. If you apply for a benefit prior to full retirement age, even though you're in the protected class of people, you still have to apply for your own first. You do not have a choice unless you want to wait until you are full retirement age. Now, whether you should wait and do that depends on the size of your benefit and the size of your husband's benefit. He waited until 70 to start taking his benefits, so it's probably a fairly reasonable benefit. And so we're looking at how long will it last. If we looked at purely your benefit, the decision to wait or not wait and take the spousal break-even age is probably around age 77, maybe 78, 79, depending upon the size of your benefits. And that's because you're not going to go cold turkey all the way from 62 to 70. You're going to get some money kicked in the middle there. But that's not how long your benefit may last. Because for your benefit to last until 78, your husband would have to still be alive. Because it sounds like his benefit, especially since he waited until 70 to take it. And when he passes away, you can step up to his larger benefit. So your benefit may not last that long. Now, this all goes back to, how large is your benefit? How large is his benefit? Is your benefit the larger benefit? Is his benefit the larger benefit? How long are we going to live? At least under basics. So let's take a look back. But you cannot do what you want to do yet.
No, but now don't apply for yours if you're thinking of doing the restricted application at age 66.
Right,
because once you do that, you've already applied for yours. We're out of time. If you need the Brain Trust, Professor Plum, or any of the Brain Trust members from Lucia Capital Group off the air, their phone number, 800-644-1150. For Professor Rick Plum, I am Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented is considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the...
advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities LLC. In the information... Views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.